From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Jim Malone, senior VOA national correspondent. Our topic on this edition of the program, the politics and substance of Senate confirmation hearings for Judge Brett Kavanaugh, U.S. President Donald Trump's choice to fill the vacancy left by retired Justice Anthony Kennedy. Our guest, Jamil Jaffer, the founder of the National Security Institute and professor of law at the Antonin Scalia Law School at George Mason University, located in the nearby state of Virginia. Mr. Jaffer teaches classes on counterterrorism, intelligence, cybersecurity, and other national security issues. Previously, Mr. Jaffer served as senior counsel on numerous congressional committees. He also served in the Justice Department, where he worked on the confirmations of Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Samuel Alito to the Supreme Court. We'll talk with Jamil Jaffer about the recent Senate confirmation hearings of Judge Brett Kavanaugh and why this choice has pleased most Republicans and infuriates many Democrats. Most Supreme Court appointments are, in a way, inconsequential. A conservative replaces a conservative, as was the case with President Trump's first vacancy. He selected Judge Neil Gorsuch to replace Antonin Scalia. But that is not the case with Judge Brett Kavanaugh, whose raucous and controversial Senate confirmation hearings recently concluded. Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation could remake the court, as it would result in a rare replacement of the court's swing justice with a more reliable conservative. Analysts say his views on the scope of executive power, the right of a woman to have a legal abortion, health care, gun safety legislation, affirmative action, and gay rights would push the court too far to the right. Judge Kavanaugh is only 53 years old. He has impeccable academic credentials from Yale University. He clerked for Justice Kennedy, the man he would replace. However, Judge Kavanaugh also has a long history of Republican political activism. He worked on the team led by Ken Starr that investigated former President Bill Clinton. He was in Florida during the presidential recount of 2000. Later, he joined the Bush White House. Meantime, despite dozens of protesters who repeatedly disrupted the raucous hearings, Democratic hopes of defeating Kavanaugh have all but faded. Many analysts say that the Republican blocking of Judge Merrick Garland, President Barack Obama's nominee to replace the late Justice Antonin Scalia, and subsequent efforts to rush through Mr. Kavanaugh have potentially undermined the Supreme Court confirmation process. A vote on Brett Kavanaugh is expected in the Senate by the end of this month. A Judiciary Committee vote could come as early as next week. And Jamil Jaffer joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Carol, it's great to be here.
As always, I'm delighted to welcome my colleague Jim Malone.
Thank you.
Well, here we are, Professor Jaffer, talking about the direction of the Supreme Court, this consequential seat. Talk about your view of why this particular selection of Judge Kavanaugh is, in fact, very consequential, because it could replace a swing vote on the Supreme Court. What's at stake?
Sure. Well, look, I mean, obviously, Justice Kennedy, very well-regarded Supreme Court justice, well-loved by all watchers of the court, and a very thoughtful, careful justice. So his decision to retire at this time, having seen the confirmation of one of his former law clerks, Neil Gorsuch, to the Supreme Court, first time ever, actually, that a former law clerk and a sitting justice have sat together on the Supreme Court, and then having his other former law clerk, Brett Kavanaugh, nominated, I think is a unique moment for Justice Kennedy, a unique moment for the nation. A lot of people have raised concerns, as you say, about the replacement of Justice Kennedy, who is perceived by some as a swing vote, with what they perceive as a more conservative justice in Brett Kavanaugh, as a shift in the court's jurisprudence. But one thing to remember is that, you know, as the court looks at cases going forward, it's very much focused on each case individually. And justices often end up in very different places than you might think based on the person that nominated them, the president that nominated them, or their own personal political views. And in a lot of ways, that's as it should be, because judges should be applying not their own personal political views, but the way the law is as passed by our Congress and signed by the president. So that's an important facet, I think, of both Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh's jurisprudence, which is a caution in setting policy from the bench, rather looking more at the words passed by the Congress and signed by the president into law.
Indeed. But on the other hand, many critics have said in his writings, whether regarding Roe v. Wade, that's the case that upheld a woman's right to have an abortion, on the scope of executive power, on gun safety legislation, they indicate that, you know, he is much more conservative and could even jeopardize some of these cases or the opinions that could have major impact on these issues.
So I think it's an interesting question what his writings say in these areas. If you look at, you know, a lot of times people are talking about what he did when he was in the White House working for President Bush, or what he did when he was working for Ken Starr, the independent counsel looking at the Clinton matter back in the early 90s. And you have to remember, at the time, he was an advocate for certain positions. As a judge, however, he's been on the bench for a dozen years, written 300 opinions, and that really represents the kind of judge or justice he would be if confirmed to the Supreme Court. And there, I think the situation is much more different, much more ambiguous, in the sense that you see him applying laws, and yes, there are people who say, look, this is a signpost that says he's against Roe v. Wade, right? But I think the Democrats tried to make that point during the hearings, and it wasn't particularly successful, in part because his record is pretty broad and open and really shows a judge who applies the law. Take, for example, the case of Salim Ahmed Hamdan, the al-Qaeda operative at Guantanamo Bay. Now, Brett Kavanaugh was a lawyer in the early Bush White House right after 9/11, and yet he decided in favor of the detainee here, saying you can't bring these charges. They're an ex post facto application of the law. So you see Judge Kavanaugh at times deciding cases against where you might think he would be or where he even was as a prior matter as a Bush administration or a Ken Starr appointed lawyer.
All right. Let me let my colleague Jim Malone jump in.
Nice to have you on the program with us.
Thanks, Jim.
I do wonder about the nexus of politics and the law here, particularly with Judge Kavanaugh's background. I mean, he worked for Ken Starr, the independent counsel who investigated President Bill Clinton, an investigation that led to Clinton's impeachment. He did serve for several years in the Bush White House. If you go back in the past, a lot of these judges, before they became justices, had some touching with politics. We know that. But he does seem to be, perhaps more so than more recent nominees, a little more political in that sense, which probably caused some alarm on the Democratic side, but also may have made some Republicans feel more comfortable with him because they would have known him from his service in politics. But I mean, are people right to be wary when someone has served in political roles in the government and now is going to be asked to be, you know, only one of nine jurists on the Supreme Court?
Sure. Well, look, there's a long history, as you point out, of justices coming from political positions, whether it's significant executive branch positions or even political campaign style positions. You know, look back to Felix Frankfurter serving in the FDR administration as a strong advocate of the New Deal. Yet when he got on the bench, he was a very moderate judge and at times took the president to task for his actions. And so you see this strand of independence in the judiciary when people become judges after they leave those positions. And you want that. You know, you look at Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? A strong, forceful advocate for women's rights and equality and the like. And when she's got on the bench, she's taken on a different role, still an important, critical role, but a different role. Elena Kagan, a political appointee as Solicitor General for the Obama administration. So this is not an unusual thing at all. We've heard that criticism, certainly, and Judge Kavanaugh definitely has served in those positions. Of course, he was confirmed to his position on the Court of Appeals by the Senate once before, and it looks like he'll be confirmed again here. So some controversy, but I think what you want is a judge who can get past their political positions before, past their prior appointments, and do it on the bench. And it looks like Judge Kavanaugh has done that for the last a little over a decade in, with these 300 opinions.
The justice that he is replacing, Justice Anthony Kennedy, my goodness, he was appointed by President Reagan back in the late 80s.
Yeah, off the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California.
A generally a conservative justice, but who has some notable deciding votes in key cases, yeah. Gay rights among them, I think death penalty cases in some cases. Kennedy was one where often his deciding vote would tip the court one way or the other. And I think the concern now is the country is politically polarized and divided very sharply. Is there a risk here that the court now veers further to the right and is almost out of step, reflecting kind of this polarized nation where tipping it too far one way or the other is going to be a problem?
Well, Jim, you raise a really important point, which is the sort of political nature potentially of the Supreme Court and how people perceive that. One of the challenges with our court today, our courts generally, but particularly the Supreme Court, is that you have seen a lot of policy be set by the court. And that's in part because we've had at times justices who look at the policy prescription and sort of have a sense of the way that should go. And what you really want is judges who are following the law, the Constitution, Constitution as our framers wrote it, as they understood it, applied the modern era, of course, and the laws of the United States as written by members of Congress. Sometimes that's going to mean that as a justice, you're going to do things you don't like and decide cases the way that you wouldn't if it were up to you. But your job as a judge is not to decide what the law should be, but to say what the law in fact is. And if there's a problem with that, the people can correct that by electing the right people to office. And so too often, both conservatives and liberals look to the court to solve the problems when they didn't like the way that Congress solved them. And that is a tendency that I think that we as a nation have to get away from. And that will, I think, address this problem of politicization of the courts. At the same time, you're right to say that we are a sharply divided moment in this country. But I think that we'll see us coming out of that. And I don't think that this appointment is going to change that fact. That's a separate thing we have to deal with. But I also think it's going to exacerbate that problem.
There's another issue that combines both politics and jurisprudence, and that is the rather unusual circumstances under which Brett Kavanaugh has been nominated. We know the lingering bitterness that many Democrats feel about the fact that President Obama's nominee, Judge Merrick Garland, was not even given a hearing. He was nominated a year before President Obama left office, and yet Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell refused to give him a hearing, saying it was too close to the election. And yet here we are, barely 2 months away from midterm election, and somehow it was just fine to have these hearings because, of course, it was President Trump, a Republican president, nominating this judge. So to what extent do you think this type of politics, again, undermines the integrity of the Supreme Court?
Well, look, I think certainly the politicization of these appointments is really problematic. We're not so long removed from the time at which Elena Kagan, even before that, Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg was confirmed by 90-plus votes in the Senate. Antonin Scalia, 90-plus votes in the Senate. We're now at a point where we're conferring votes by bare majorities. And that's really an unfortunate place for the country to be. And I think that reflects what Jim was saying earlier about the polarization of our nation and the way we're divided. Now, that being said, you know, the Merrick Garland situation is an interesting one. Obviously, Judge Garland, it's not nice what happened to him. At the same time, this was a rule sort of put in place by Joe Biden, who said, President George H.W. Bush, don't send anybody up. We're not going to confirm aid during the course of a presidential election. Different rule when it comes to midterm elections, but the general presidential rule is we don't do it in presidential election years. Understandable that people are upset about the way that went. It's interesting to note that Justice Gorsuch, the first call he made after he was nominated was to Judge Merrick Garland. He actually had supported Judge Merrick Garland when he was held up by Republicans in the Senate to get onto the D.C. Circuit. So it doesn't change the fact about what happened, but it's an interesting side note to this story. So look, obviously these are challenging issues. We've made ourselves, put ourselves in a more political place with the Senate having gotten rid of the filibuster for appellate nominees, now gotten rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees. That's not a good thing for the country because it prevents us from reaching consensus. Everyone's going to point fingers at everybody else about who started this, but we are where we are. And you and Jim are both right that this politicization is bad for the judiciary and bad for the country.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Jamil Jaffer. He's professor of law at the Antonin Scalia Law School at George Mason University. And joining me on the program is senior VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. And I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a big shout out to loyal listener Marcus Yusufu Mangai, who resides in Abuja, Nigeria. Thanks so much for your great email. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And now let me turn to Jim Malone for another question.
During the confirmation hearings, Democrats were very concerned about the issue of abortion. It's become a flashpoint in the Supreme Court ever since the 70s with the famous Roe versus Wade decision that basically legalized some forms of abortion, at least. Do you think the time will come, and it wasn't clear from Judge Kavanaugh's testimony, that there's always a debate whether a justice considers Roe v. Wade what's called settled law, that is, not to be overturned? Often justices cite that as a principle. Of course, if that were the case, some infamous cases, Plessy versus Ferguson
right.
and others,
exactly.
would not have been touched and would have been allowed to continue. But in any event, can you see a time when a conservative majority could actually try to overturn that?
It's hard to see that at where we sit today in the country, in part because Roe v. Wade has been around a long time. There's a lot of built-up interests around Roe, and a lot of cases that come out of Roe v. Wade that rely on some of its underlying holdings that have really shaped the law as we know it today. And so I think it's unlikely to see Roe v. Wade be overturned. You've seen time and again when Republicans nominate a Supreme Court justice, Democrats say, oh, this is the end. Roe v. Wade's gone. Woman's right to choose is out the door. Look at this terrible nominee. And it hasn't happened yet. And so it's never say never. But we've seen, as you say, overturning prior precedent when it's wrong is important. Plessy versus Ferguson is a good example. Korematsu v. U.S. just recently overturned by the court, the Japanese internment case where we intern our own citizens of Japanese descent, recently overturned by a Supreme Court decision. So there's a long history of overturning longstanding, settled law. That's an important thing for the court to do. At the same time, we listen to what Judge Kavanaugh said on the bench about the law of precedent and the idea that where there are settled expectations, where people have ordered their lives around a certain set of precedent, that's something to be considered. It's not dispositive, but it's something to be considered when you're considering whether to overturn precedent, how wrong it is, you know, whether it's been around for a long time and the like. These are all factors to be considered.
One thing interesting about Judge Kavanaugh's background is that when he was in the Starr investigation, he was very much for pursuing the investigation aggressively against the sitting president. When he went into the Bush White House after several years, he had a change of heart and had decided that, in fact, has written about, it could be an unnecessary distraction for a president to deal with almost any kind of an investigation. Now, cynics would say it was okay to go after a Democrat who was in the White House, but not a Republican. But the issue of presidential power has come into sharp focus now, given President Trump, given his battles with the Justice Department and potentially with the courts. So this is an issue on which he will be judged if he is confirmed on the high court.
And let me just add to what Jim said, because many, not just Democrats, but many people are concerned about the fact that because President Trump is caught up in an investigation by the special counsel and the fact that he selected a Supreme Court nominee who has expressed views about the wisdom of investigating a sitting president, that's very much disconcerting. When asked directly by senators in the confirmation hearings, that he did not explicitly say he would recuse himself from such a case should it come before the Supreme Court. That caused some serious concerns.
Well, so let's talk about that last piece first, I think. An important question about whether nominees to the Supreme Court or any other court should commit themselves to any decision, whether that's a yes or no on a case or a yes or no on a recusal. And I think the longstanding precedent going back well before, but at least back to Thurgood Marshall, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan, no hints, no previews, no forecasts. Elena Kagan, no thumbs up, no thumbs down. I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do. You don't want a judge to do that because then litigants that come before that judge think the judge has pre-decided their case, whether they're going to recuse or not. Those are not things you want a judge, a nominee to do ever. Judge Kavanaugh, just like every prior justice nominee, every prior Supreme Court nominee before him, took that position, and I think that was the right position to take. Now, on this question whether Judge Kavanaugh thinks executive power, whether the president should be immune from prosecution or should be prosecuted aggressively, I think, as Jim pointed out, the record is mixed in this space. As an advocate at the Independent Counsel Office, he wanted to go aggressively after Clinton. As an advocate in the Bush administration in the White House, he said no. Oftentimes, you stand where you sit. And that's what you do as an advocate, as a lawyer. As a judge, however, the role is completely different. Your job is not to advocate for one position or another. Neither does it matter what your own point of view is. What matters is, what does the law say in this space?
So you don't think he would feel beholden to President Trump for his position on the Supreme Court,
Absolutely.
And then therefore that could affect his decision?
Absolutely not. In fact, to the contrary, he was asked that very question during his hearings, and he was very clear on this point. Absolutely not. His loyalty is to the Constitution of the United States. He was very clear on that question, and that's how it should be for a judge. We've seen lots of judges. I mentioned Felix Frankfurter before, an ardent supporter of FDR, yet as a Supreme Court justice, acted differently. Judge Kavanaugh himself on the bench, a close associate of the President Bush, the 9/11 precedent, the 9/11 cases, Gitmo and the like, deciding against the government in a very important 9/11 case. So not unusual to see judges do that, and that's the right thing for a judge to do. And on this question of presidential power and whether the president should or could be investigated, you know, there's a lot of law in this space, most prominently U.S. v. Nixon. And I think very interestingly at Judge Kavanaugh's hearing, when asked to give the four most important cases that he thought about the Supreme Court, he talked about Marbury versus Madison, not surprising, Brown v. Board of Education, kind of a gimme, right? Everyone agrees on that one. He interestingly said Youngstown Steel, a case where the Supreme Court stood up to President Truman trying to nationalize the steel mills in a wartime scenario, and U.S. v. Nixon. So it's I think, an interesting point that Judge Kavanaugh is making about the independence of the judiciary. While he didn't say the words, I think the message there was clear. judges can and should be independent of the people that appointed them, their loyalty to the Constitution and the laws of the United States.
But like everything in life is complicated, it was also brought up by Democrats that he had questioned about U.S. v. Nixon at one point in a statement or a speech, just raising the idea whether that was rightly decided. So I think it just goes to the idea that there continue to be doubts. But right. The other thing here is it's obvious that the confirmation process has long become a political proxy war for the two parties. Yeah.
The game of gotcha almost, Jim. It's really unfortunate.
As you pointed out, there are a number of justices in the past who were, I can't see, especially say on the Republican side now, it could be a real struggle for them to support perhaps a Democratic nominee to the court.
I mean, you can't imagine a Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a very active litigant, or an Anton Scalia, a very strong conservative. You can't see either one of them getting through with barely 50 votes, much less 90 votes like they both did. And it's unfortunate as a country because the Supreme Court, if handled properly, should be immune from these things. We should be confirming people who are qualified in the 90s, and we should be letting them do their job, which is not to set policy, but instead to say what the law is.
The Chief Justice, John Roberts, has a conservative record, appointed by President Bush. There's pressure now from some circles. Some see him as likely to be a more moderating force, taking perhaps some of the slack from Justice Kennedy to kind of be an arbiter in the middle. What kind of likelihood do you see of Roberts' role changing on the court now?
Well, I think we've seen some of that already. I think that we've seen Chief Justice Roberts take positions in cases where there's been close votes. And in fact, you've seen in the last two terms, Justice Kennedy actually appear to be, quote unquote, more conservative or take more conservative positions than the Chief Justice. And so I think you've seen that sort of evolution in place. And actually, it's not unusual for Chief Justice. Oftentimes, part of their role, the way they see their role, is to build consensus on the court, to try and get cases decided 9-0 when they were important to the country. Brown v. Board of Education being the most obvious example of that. It wouldn't be unusual to see that kind of an evolution take place, and we'll see what happens going forward.
We've heard that he could become the new so-called swing justice, potentially, Chief Justice John Roberts.
You would hope, and again, I realize that maybe what I'm saying is aspirational, but in cases, you shouldn't be able to tell from a justice's vote what kind of a president, Republican or Democrat president appointed them, nor should you be able to tell what their personal politics are. You should see them interpreting the law and reading the law, trying to make the clearest interpretation of the law that's there. Unfortunately, we, Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals alike, have sought to have the Supreme Court decide cases in a policy-enforcing way, and the court sometimes has gone along with that. And that's unfortunate both as a body politic and for the court itself, and we as a country need to get away from that approach to the Supreme Court, in my view.
But the earlier point about they are supposed to judge issues as they come, as justices, that's not entirely right because they do take into account the politics of their decisions. And we saw that, say, with Justice Roberts and the health care decision on Obamacare. And so it does seem when you get to the Supreme Court, there's something else that comes into the decision-making process.
So I think you're right, Jim, to say that that does appear to be how things happen sometimes in the Supreme Court. I'm advocating for the view, and I'm a strong believer of the view, that that shouldn't happen, that the court's job is not to account for politics. The court's job is to read the law as given to them by the people who are elected by Congress. And the reason why, Jim, is because we can't unelect Supreme Court justices. Yes, we could remove them in theory through impeachment, but that never happens. But we can remove politicians, congressmen, senators, the president even. And that's how our framers expected it. They expected them to make the decision about what the law is, and the Supreme Court to interpret it, not to change it. Unfortunately, we've become addicted in this country as a body politic to, when we don't like the outcome of the politics on Capitol Hill or in the White House, to run to the Supreme Court, file a lawsuit, and get the law changed. Conservatives do it too. Liberals do it too. It's not a good way to do business, and the court should reject that way of doing business. Should say, look, you have a problem with the healthcare decision? Congress is your solution, not the courts.
But as you said, people are still resorting to the courts. And that is the concern about the potential for overturning Roe v. Wade.
Sure.
And many are concerned that even if Judge Kavanaugh, if he becomes justice, would not necessarily be the key vote to overturn it, that it's going to be whittled away at. And many cases will be coming before the court, cases on which Justice Kennedy voted to uphold the safeguards in Roe v. Wade and their concern. So whether it's on the right to have an abortion or gun safety legislation on which, again, Judge Kavanaugh has shown perhaps a greater predilection for the very strict wording of the Second Amendment. So these are concerns among many Americans.
Well, look, these are important concerns and concerns that I think Americans should take up in the first instance with their members of Congress and their state legislatures. The reason you see these cases about abortion coming to the Supreme Court, is because state legislatures are deciding to restrict abortion rights, that there is a political consensus in that state to modify the law. Not the judges, but the body politic has to account for those facts on the ground. Judges should not be accounting for that. Judges should be applying the law as it stands. Now, the question about whether Justice Kennedy, in fact, has been so supportive of Roe as this will change the law so dramatically, I think that's actually a little harder to justify in the following way. Justice Kennedy, to be sure, was a key vote in Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which upheld the core decision in Roe. But Casey itself created the ability to restrict that right at some level. No undue burden. Cases later on that interpreted that kept further decreasing the scope of the right. And so this idea somehow that Justice Kennedy was an ardent supporter of the right to abortion or ardent supporter of Roe, or that it would be a dramatic change going forward, I think is not necessarily a fair reading of the case law as we've seen it before.
Is that where we're headed in this country? And I think if the court does move to the right, if Kavanaugh is confirmed, it's not so much that perhaps Roe would be overturned in some giant way. It's that states would have more leeway to enact their own restrictions. And I often wonder, isn't that heading us down a path toward further polarization in the country? If you're living in states X, Y, and Z, you know they're going to feel this way about abortion, gun rights, and so forth. It just seems like we are headed down a path here, and the court might reflect this, might accelerate it, who knows, of a more divided country.
Well, you know, our framers intended for states to be laboratories of experiment and that people have different positions in different states. It's why the state legislatures in the early Constitution were thought to be so much more powerful than the federal legislature, the state courts too, even. And so that's obviously changed over time, particularly since the New Deal. The federal government has been more resurgent and been stronger. But you do want the states to do some experimentation. Look at the marijuana experiments going on in California and Colorado, things that I might personally not agree with. But we see that sort of thing happening in states. We've seen a lot of other places where states are doing things differently. Some states are bastions of protection for immigrants who come to this country, even if they may come here illegally, so-called sanctuary states, right? And then other states are aggressively cracking down, and tax laws are different in states. The death penalty, a very controversial issue, different across many states, both in the way it's applied, where they have it at all, and how they utilize it, and the way they conduct executions, right? So we don't have national standards in almost any area that's controversial affirmative action. There are very few areas where the law is uniform, and it's the way the framers intended it. Now, is that concerning for core constitutional rights? Of course it is. The First Amendment's a great example, right? The Congress shall make no law. Of course, that doesn't really mean no law. It means pretty much no law. Second Amendment, same thing, right? Different states regulated different ways. We want states to be able to try out different gun control laws, right? At the same time, there's this core right, core free speech right, core right to keep and bear arms, core potential right that the court identified in Roe about abortion. But there are different ways that's applied, whether it's the Second Amendment, right, or the abortion right in different states, or marijuana or drugs.
Well, Jamil Jaffer, before we close, anything you'd like to comment about with respect to Judge Kavanaugh's nomination and potential confirmation? How do you see his elevation to the Supreme Court, should indeed he be confirmed, and how that would change the court?
Well, look, Judge Kavanaugh, like a lot of the recent nominees before him, going back to Elena Kagan and other recent nominees, Judge Gorsuch, obviously highly qualified, obviously very smart. Went to Yale twice, been on the bench 12 years, 300 cases, a long record. The Senate canon should judge him based on that record and the materials they've gotten and his hours and hours of testimony. And I think that at some point in this country, we've got to get to the point where we say, look, we recognize Republicans are going to put conservatives on the court, Democrats are going to put liberals on the court. That's the nature of this business, has been for 200 some plus years. That's the situation we live in. The question is this person qualified? Are they dramatically outside the mainstream? If the answer is no, they should be confirmed by significant majorities. We've gotten away from that. We used to do that just 10, 15, 20 years ago, not that long ago. We're not that far removed. And yes, we're in a very polarized place in this country today, but that could be a first step of the Senate becoming more adult and the Congress being more adult and bringing our body politic to a more adult place instead of the partisan bickering that we see today that's been magnified by recent debates in the recent elections.
Jamil Jaffer is professor of law and director of the National Security Law and Policy Program at the Antonin Scalia Law School at George Mason University. Jamil Jaffer, thanks so much for coming in, shedding so much light on this very important topic of the Supreme Court here in the United States.
Thanks, Carol. Thanks, Jim.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Joe Gill, and joining me on the program was senior VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week
for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.